So, the prophet Zechariah. Haggai, as you would remember from last week, gave his bursts of energetic stuff in the year 520. Haggai also was there, so they must have been in cahoots in 520, and then Haggai has something further to say 2 years later. So they're contemporaries, and we've come, we have returned from exile. I want to run through some of that with you again, just because it's, your memory isn't probably as good as it could be. So let's go back to remind you of what we did last week to get the setting right. There's the Judah we're talking about, that tiny little landlocked part of the world, and Jerusalem is up the top of it. And that's where they're returning. 538 was the Edict of Cyrus, which permitted the return of the exiles to Jerusalem with the financial support to rebuild their temple. So Cyrus had this whole new idea of empire, which was to have people with their own religions, their own land, etc., but a very strong public service, really, that ran right through the area and maintained the tributes, the money coming into the centre, etc. So in 537, because of that edict, a small group set out, led by a man called Sheshbazzar, and you can find this in those books of history, really, Ezra and Chronicles, and they cleared the temple, ready to build, but they didn't get on with the building. There's a comparison again. If you weren't here last week, this will interest you, and if you were, it'll remind you. That's Judah there, that larger area prior to the exile, and that's the Judah after the exile. The big difference is the Edomites, the Idumea we know from the New Testament. Herod was an Idumean. So the Edomites had been pushed west by the Arabs and coming out of the Nabatean Arabs from the Arabia. And so they've taken over the southern part of Judah. That'll become relevant to some of the dreadful things that are said about the Edomites by the Jews in the Jewish prophets. So that's the comparison there. Here we have Cyrus was killed in 530 and was succeeded by his son, who was killed or whatever on his way back from Egypt in 522. And then Darius, who was the third, who was a relation but a distant relation and who took over, he settled the empire down and he wanted to set up Judah as a strong area against Egypt. The Persian Empire, which we're dealing with right through the rest of our time together on the prophets, there are three emperors for 100 years, so very stable, after Darius. There's a map that I got from a little book I was given last week by our own Barbara, who has a book on the Persians. You'd lend it to anyone who looked trustworthy, wouldn't you? So perhaps not in this group, but somewhere you'll find someone. No. So you lent it to me and I got it back to you, yeah. So there's a map, a good map, thank you, of the Persian Empire, right over here to the Indus River, as it developed over that 100 years I'm telling you about, Daria. And it comes from, and here's Jerusalem, and Judah's that tiny little dot, about the size of that dot, really. So what is it in such a big area? Almost nothing of any great significance. So we now move to today's lecture. The most obvious characteristic of the Zechariah scroll, which we're about to look into today, is its visions. So here's a visionary. Zechariah has three visions that reveal the transformation that Yahweh is intent on bringing about for the whole earth. In the first, he sees horses and riders patrolling the earth, and Yahweh, leading the armies, is returning to Jerusalem. This is followed by a second vision, which we'll look at, of four horns and four blacksmiths. and a third in which Jerusalem is wondrously expanded and Jerusalem is attracting the foreign nations to come to it. Not this tiny little thing they're experiencing, but it's going to be a great big area, almost an empire on its own. There are two visions in which Zechariah sees the restoration brought about by the divine presence. One focuses on the high priest Joshua, whom we've already read about last week, and the other on the governor Zerubbabel. Finally, there's another set of three visions, and in the last, the prophet once again sees the horses and chariots patrolling the earth. So a series of visions, which is new for us, a new type of writing and so on. Let's begin. Zechariah chapter 1, verses 1 to 6. In the eighth month, in the second year of Darius. Well, Haggai was all in the second year of Darius, and one of the visions was in the seventh month that we did in chapter 2. And later in chapter 2, one was in the ninth month. So clearly they're overlapping, and it's a small little area. They must have known each other. So in the eighth month, in the second year of Darius, the word of Yahweh came to the prophet Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, saying, Yahweh was very angry with your ancestors. Well, you've picked that up, haven't you? That's their understanding of the destruction of Jerusalem. Yahweh's anger against their ancestors. Because Yahweh's just, Yahweh wouldn't have destroyed the city for no reason. So the logic is perfect, the theology is intact, it just happens to be wrong. But that's what happens with theology. It's a science and it has to be awakened by new experiences. So, Yahweh was very angry with your ancestors. Therefore, say to them, thus says Yahweh of hosts. Yahweh of hosts, that's the heavenly hosts, usually, the stars, which were thought of as living, and then the armies, of course. Return to me, here we are, says Yahweh, and I will return to you, says Yahweh of hosts. In awkward language, in a way, I would think, here am I criticizing the prophets, but you'll have to put up with me, You know, if you return to me, I'll return to you. You can see something wrong with that theology, can't you? It's got a meaning if you dig into it, but Yahweh has never gone away from anybody. So, but if you return to me, you'll experience the fact that I'm there. This is the way I think that's what he means, I think. So don't be like your ancestors, because we have to return, we have to turn around, or we won't face the light. That's the point. So change your life, open your heart, we might say. Listen to your heart, listen to the mystery of God, and you'll see that I'm with you. But if you keep behaving the way your ancestors did, you'll miss out on the divine communion. That's me, sorry. Now, Zechariah, don't be like your ancestors to whom the former prophets proclaimed. Former prophets. We haven't met that expression before either, but it tells you something, that we're now in a history of prophecy being read and kept, and the exile did a lot of this and handed down, and they're listening and learning from the older prophets, who all seemed a bit independent, mostly anyhow at the time. Return from your evil ways and your evil deeds. But they didn't heed or hear or heed me, says Yahweh. Your ancestors, where are they? And the prophets, do they live forever? But my words and my statutes, which I commanded my servants, the prophets, did they not overtake your ancestors? I don't think this needs explanation. Remember what happened to them because they didn't listen. So, the people repented. The people, whatever that means, the people took him seriously and at least wanted to change their life. And they said, Yahweh of hosts has dealt with us according to our ways and deeds. They took responsibility for what had happened, just as he planned to do. Then we begin our visions. In the night, I saw a man riding on a red horse. He was standing among the myrtle trees in the deep. And behind him were red, sorrel. What's sorrel? What colour is that?
A reddy colour.
Right, reddy browny colour, all right. Red, sorrel and white horses. And I said, what are these, my lord? The angel who talked with me, and here we have an interesting thing that's going to come all from now on, an intermediary angel, because God can't direct talk between God, the transcendent God, so they have this intermediary, which the New Testament's full of. The angel Gabriel came to Mary, well, God came to her, of course, or was with her, but they talk about the angel. The angel who talked with me said to me, I'll show you what they are. So the man who was standing among the myrtle trees answered, they are those whom Yahweh has sent to patrol the earth. Then they spoke to the angel of Yahweh who was standing among the myrtle trees. We have patrolled the earth, and lo, the whole earth remains at peace. I think we have to assume there are riders on the horses, though it doesn't actually say. Then the angel of Yahweh said, Yahweh of hosts, how long will you withhold mercy from Jerusalem and the cities of Judah, with which you've been angry these 70 years? I'll come back to that in a moment. Why 70? And the year 70 years might be from the actual destruction of Jerusalem through to now, you know, in rough figures, that's how long it was, the exile and now their return. Then Yahweh replied with gracious and comforting words to the angel who talked with me. Here's where the 70 comes from. We met this earlier, but you wouldn't expect to remember. Chapter 25, verses 11 to 12 of Jeremiah, the one writing at the beginning of the exile, at the time of the destruction, says, the whole land will become a ruin and a waste, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Then, after 70 years are completed, I'll punish the king of Babylon and that nation, the land of the Chaldeans, for their iniquity, says Yahweh, making the land an everlasting waste. Which, by the way, didn't happen, but there we are. Again, chapter 29, verse 10 of Jeremiah. For thus says Yahweh, only when Babylon's 70 years are completed will I visit you, and I'll fulfill to you my promise and bring you back to this place. So there are two promises there, and you can see that Zechariah is seeing their present situation, now that they've come back, as the fulfillment of the promise made by Jeremiah 70 years before. That'll come back a lot into the book of Daniel and so on. It was a number that fascinated. It was clearly a symbolic number, but they liked to see, just as we do, we talk about on the third day Jesus will rise again, and we like to see that, and we like to think Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and, you know, we just like to get get things tidy. All right. Zechariah chapter 1, 14 to 17. So the angel talked with me and said to me, proclaim this message. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, I am very jealous for Jerusalem and for Zion, and I'm extremely angry with the nations that are at ease. The word jealous is difficult. Zealous. Sorry, I said jealous, no problem. Because zealous and jealous are related words. And in Greek it's the same word, zelos, which is where we get it from. So jealous, zealous, they get a bit... They're two different feelings, really, to be zealous and to be jealous, but they must be related somewhere because these languages seem to have one word for both. So it's some kind of a strong feeling. Anyhow, I'll leave it at that. So I'm very zealous for Jerusalem. And I'm extremely angry with the nations that are at ease. For while I was only a little angry, they made the disaster worse. Therefore, thus says Yahweh, I've returned to Jerusalem with compassion. My house shall be built in it, says Yahweh of hosts, and the measuring line shall be stretched out over Jerusalem. The measuring line, the walls, they're going to build the walls and it'll be a marvellous city. It isn't while he's talking, but it will be. Proclaim further, thus says Yahweh of hosts, my cities will again overflow with prosperity. Yahweh will again comfort Zion. He will once again choose Jerusalem. Well, you can imagine them loving to hear that in their drift. We did it last week, the difficult economic and social period they're going through. There's this sense of promise from the prophet about the future. And now a second vision. I looked and I saw four horns. And I asked the angel who talked with me, what are these? And he answered me, these are the horns that have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. Horn is a sign of power, of course. Then Yahweh showed me four blacksmiths. And I asked, what are they coming to do? And he answered, these are the horns that scattered Judah so that no head could be raised. But these, the horns, have come to terrify them, to strike down the horns of the nations that lifted up their horns against the land of Judah to scatter its people. So God is going to bring arrangements into history whereby the powers that destroyed Judah are going to themselves be destroyed. The third vision, I looked up and I saw a man with a measuring line in his hand. Then I asked, where are you going? And he said, to measure Jerusalem, meaning, obviously, with the purpose of building a wall to defend the city, to see what's its width and what its length is. Then the angel who talked with me came forward, and another angel came forward to meet him and said to him, run, say to that young man, Jerusalem shall be inhabited like villages without walls. The young man is the man with the measuring line. Because of the multitude and people and animals in it, it'll be too big to wall in. So tell him not to waste his time building a wall. It's because Jerusalem's going to be so vast with all the people coming in and the children and all that. So, for I, says Yahweh, quite a lovely image, I will be a wall of fire all around it, says Yahweh. So Yahweh is going to protect like a fire. What we have on our computers, don't we? What are they called? A firewall, is that it? I'll be a wall of fire around Jerusalem. No one will dare come near you. And I'll be the glory within it. So Yahweh will protect it and be within the city to bring it honour, glory, all of that. Promise. Chapter 2. Sing and rejoice, O daughter Zion, for lo, I will come and dwell in your midst, says Yahweh. Many nations will join themselves to Yahweh on that day, and they will be my people, and I'll dwell in your midst. And you'll know that Yahweh of hosts has sent me to you. Yahweh will inherit Judah as his portion in the Holy Land and will again choose Jerusalem. Be silent, all people before Yahweh, for he has roused himself from his holy dwelling. I think it's simple enough, but it's all hopeful promise that in this broken down city and miserable temple that they're struggling to put the rocks together, it's going to be glorious because of Yahweh's love. There's a fourth vision in chapter 3, verses 1 to 5. Then he showed me the high priest Joshua standing before the angel of Yahweh, and the Satan, standing at his right hand to accuse him. This is the first time the Satan has been mentioned in the biblical literature. He'll become a very interesting character in the book of Job, as you may know. So, the Satan, and you've got to put the in, we're not talking about the Satan of later thing, which was another name for the devil. Satan, as we might have heard it, is kind of tempting people. Satan is trying to get people to do wrong. Satan is a name for the prince of demons in hell and all this stuff that you might be familiar with. Try and put that out of your head for a minute. Because this Satan, the Satan, is the counsel for the prosecution. He's got a job to do in the counsel of God, and his job is to check that people are what they say they are. And if they're not, to report back. And this is pretty significant because Jerusalem would be experiencing plenty of the Satans, the people who are, because Persia depended on spies. They had spies everywhere. So it was really a very tightly controlled empire, and reports back. And if you got a bad report, you wouldn't get any property. And if you got a good report, you might get a bit more, etc. So it was closely governed, and was the best public service the world had known. And the Satan is the one whose job it is to go out and check that things are the way they should be. So here you've got the Satan standing at God's right hand to accuse Joshua. And Yahweh said to the Satan, Yahweh rebuke you, O Satan. Yahweh, who has chosen Jerusalem, rebuke you. Is not this man a brand plucked from the fire? So the spy has come in. He's about to give the dirty on Joshua, and God won't have it. Joshua has been plucked from the fire. His grandfather was killed, etc., but he's been saved specially for this purpose, so he's a special one of God, and he won't listen to this spy who's trying to put him down. Pretty good text, this one. Now Joshua was dressed with filthy clothes as he stood before the angel. The angel said to those who were standing before him, take off his filthy clothes. And to him he said, see, I've taken your guilt away from you. I will clothe you with festal apparel. Yes, so there is sin involved, but it's forgivable, it's healable, I will take off your filthy clothing, high priest, and I will put on you this festal apparel. And I said, let them put a clean turban on his head. So they put a clean turban on his head and clothed him with the apparel, and the angel of Yahweh was standing by.
And the eye is Zechariah, is it?
Pardon?
The eye is Zechariah, is it? And I said.
I think so, yes, isn't it?
You've got a part in the play.
It looks like it, doesn't it? I'd have to look at that more closely and just check it, because the eye is... It wouldn't be surprised, or it might be God, is it?
I think it is, because two lines up you see, see, I have taken your guilt away from you.
Oh, sorry,
I think it is Yahweh.
It's Yahweh, I think, yeah. Thank you for that. Well, the angel and Yahweh are the same, and the prophet and Yahweh are the same often, like it's the words coming Yahweh. So it's a, you just, yeah, I was a bit caught off balance there, but it looks like it's Yahweh to me. Then the angel of Yahweh assured Joshua, saying, now the angel of Yahweh, you see, is really Yahweh, but they're using the word angel of Yahweh, meaning the appearance of Yahweh, the way the transcendent Yahweh actually comes and talks with us is the angel of Yahweh, but it's Yahweh. They don't have, there's no angels yet in their literature, meaning like we think of angels, spiritual beings, or demons for that matter. Thus, the angel of Yahweh assured Joshua, saying, thus says Yahweh of hosts, if you will walk in my ways and keep my requirements, then you shall rule my house and have charge of my courts, and I'll give you the right of access among those who are standing here. What that picks up is the changed role of the chief priest, I'll call him for a moment, from before the exile till after. Prior to the exile, the king is really in charge of everything. And the king is even a priest in the sense of a priest according to the order of Melchizedek, if you know that. But he wasn't a cultic priest. But the cultic priests were an arm of the king, really. So he was dominant and monarchic, etc. After the exile, we've seen we've got a governor, not a king, and we've got, for the first time, what we'll call a high priest. The chief priest has now become, well, what it says is there. The right of access is the right of access into this new temple. And you would know that the high priest, in the practice of the cult, was the only one allowed into the inner sanctuary of the temple on the feast of Yom Kippur, etc. So he's got a dominant role in the running of the Torah and in the running of the cult, of the community. Now listen, Yahweh, Joshua, high priest, you and your colleagues who sit before you, for they are an omen of things to come. Here we've got a new thing. I am going to bring my servant, unnamed, the branch of a tree. Where does that expression come from, the branch? It's left vague. You would half be expecting him to be talking about Zerubbabel, but he doesn't talk about, he talks about the branch. We'll do more of this later. And this is a text from Jeremiah that he's drawing on clearly. Jeremiah 23 verse 5 reads, the days are surely coming, says Yahweh, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, a branch of the tree, and he shall reign as king and deal wisely and shall execute justice and righteousness in the land. So with that promise that one day there'd be a proper king, a proper anointed one, a Mashiach, a Messiah, a branch of the David line, that's what Zechariah is picking up. And he's not talking about the governor, he's talking about the branch, the one who will be king and bring about the reign of God in the world, etc. So we're dealing with what's called messianism here. The text goes on of Zechariah, so I'll go back and then do it in a straight line. Now listen, Joshua, high priest, you and your colleagues who sit before you, they are an omen of things to come. I'm going to raise my servant, the branch, for on the stone that I have set before Joshua, on a single stone with seven facets, I will engrave its inscription, says Yahweh of hosts, and I'll remove the guilt of this land in a single day. The high priest is going to be given, is given the function of, when the branch appears, it'll be the high priest's job to crown the Messiah. On that day, whenever, says the Lord of Yahweh of hosts, you shall invite each other to come under your vine and fig tree. A little simple bucolic picture of what some of you have already done. I presume you retired, some of you?
Yes.